Hello, and welcome back to Slut PhD. I am your host, Julie Fennell, and I am here today again with Doug Robinson, friend of mine, a friend of the show. And today we're going to be talking about group sex.
We are?
Yes.
Really?
Yes, we are.
Man, that's wild.
Why would I have picked you to talk about group sex, Doug?
I think because we've attended a number of events and parties together where we have both been in these same group sex spaces.
Oh, I love how, like, you made that sound so kind of innocent, really.
I mean, what is more innocent than people gathering together to do what we've been doing as a species since the dawn of time?
Is that your justification for why you just show up for all these things that are labeled orgies?
Well, my justification is I appreciate good times, good people, and great orgasms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think you have better orgasms in group sex spaces?
Oh, better. I'm not going to say better, but I will say that the experience is different. I will say that the stimulation can be greater, but not that it is better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think actually I would tend to agree on that. Some of the best orgasms I've ever had in my life were in group sex situations, but they were in consecrated temples.
What?
I know.
Please break that down for me.
Well, you know, I'm a pagan, and so, like, these were in sex spaces that were set aside and, like, dedicated to the goddess Aphrodite.
Mm-hmm.
And, in both of those spaces, I just had, like, these crazy tantric, very much the kind of thing that tantric people sort of preach in terms of, you know, like, the orgasm that blows your mind and makes you feel one with the world.
I'm Baptist. We don't really have that.
You don't have that?
Yeah, we didn't have that.
I'm sorry.
Baptist church on
Sundays. You know, I didn't grow up with it. I came to that in my old age.
Oh.
By old age, I mean, I was like, I don't know. I started going to Coven when I was 19, but I guess I converted myself to Wicca when I was like 12. So.
I can't say I'm still Baptist in that same way, but I do very much believe in, like, spaces that are in where we're invited to be our whole selves, and I wish more religious spaces were like that. I think what's beautiful about group sex spaces is oftentimes people are actually asked and tasked to tap into their full self and be present with each other. So maybe it's kind of close to religion.
It is. I mean, I tend to think that a lot of, because we go to kink camp together.
Yeah.
All right. We go to kink camp a lot, and you've gone to the hotel events as well. So.
Yeah, I went to Winter Fire in 2019.
Okay.
One time.
I've been to plenty of kink hotel events. I don't think that they're quite as spiritual. I've ever been, I don't think, to a single kink hotel event that was as spiritual as kink camp, various kink camp events I've been to. And I'm never quite sure what that what causes that, but I think some of it is the open sex, right? Like in the hotel spaces, it ends up happening in people's rooms and it ends up happening behind like curtains.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're in camp, because I've been to kink camps, not just by Dark Odyssey, but by a couple other groups as well. And it's just everything's out there. You can see everything. And I actually have come to believe, based on some of the research that I've seen and also my own experiences, that having sex in proximity to one another is a way that humans learn to define like tribe and family, which I know sounds a little bit wild. But if you think about how we evolved as a species, as far as we can tell, we spent a lot of times in caves, right? And it's like your cave was your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, you went out, you gathered food together and whatnot. But in the winter, you were probably kind of locked in for a while.
Yeah.
Right. And so I'm assuming that we probably fucked a fair bit in those caves.
Gotta keep warm.
You gotta keep warm somehow. And, you know, it was boring. And so I really tend to believe that we really understand as a species, people who we are in proximity to sex are like our people. And I think that some of why like being at those kind of camp spaces where you see people nearby fucking and whatnot, that helps to kind of define that a little bit for you. This is a theory that I've had for a bit. Whereas that doesn't happen as much at hotel kink events because everything's a little bit more locked.
Closed off.
Closed off. Plus, people play a lot in their rooms at hotel kink.
Well, I mean, if you're spending the money on the hotel room.
Right. And I mean, also, I think even among kinky people, some of whom are pretty exhibitionistic, a lot of them still aren't exhibitionistic. And so, you know, like going back to your room to fuck is still nice.
Yeah. Well, it's also, again, like intimacy in that way. Like that, right. That's an intimacy that we are more accustomed to because that's the thing we have been conditioned to recently, right?
Yeah.
I think when you talk about this, this human in caves, right? This idea that people are fucking indoors.
Yeah.
Is probably a relatively new thing in the scope of human experience.
Very much so. Yeah. But especially to do so relatively privately.
Yeah.
Even, you know, for a long time there, when people, you're talking about like rich people, right? There was, we don't tend to show it in movies. Sometimes we do for humorous effect. They were just like fucking in front of their servants all the time, right? It was just normal.
Yeah.
And that idea has really evaporated from, I think, a lot of our culture. And I think it's a huge part of what drives the interest in porn, because people want the stimulation of seeing other people have sex. And we've just been told that that's somehow shameful or we should repress it. And actually, I think it's quite normal to be turned on by the sounds of other people having sex or the sight of other people having sex. And that that's what you're sort of evolved, I think, in a lot of ways to be excited about. And one of the things that really I thought at camp was like, I remember fucking around the fire under the full moon. I was like, this is what humans have been doing for like longer than we've been human, I think, is having sex with a bunch of other people around you at the same time, around a fire and under the full moon. Also, I have to say, people look so much hotter in that light. This is my proof that this is what we were like evolved to want to have sex under those circumstances.
I guess like I'm interested in how you keep saying the word evolve.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Because like humans are animals.
Sure.
Right? Like we love to be like, oh, we're this thing. But no, we are animals. And we're, from what I understand, which could be very little, the only animal that fucks indoors, right? Like that is
all our pets do.
Why?
Well, we left them.
Well, I mean, my cat was spayed and neutered. Bob Barker. He told everybody.
Yeah.
But I think about how animals have mating seasons.
Yeah.
Right? That like actually all the birds are looking for mates at the same time.
Yeah.
All doing the dance at the same time to find the people. Right. Like I think this is actually we're talking about a very natural thing that doesn't just exist within humans.
Yeah.
That to be in community and to engage in intimacy in community is part of what it is to just exist.
Right. Yeah. And I think we've been taught to find that kind of shameful, to lock ourselves away from that.
I mean, I think we're also ashamed of like our fantasies, we're ashamed of our bodies, right? Like there's so much that we are told that like is not good enough. Even when we think about porn, right?
Right.
Like, when we think about group sex, like, what are the bodies people imagine are in these spaces? And this is not to say that, like, the bodies do look like one thing or another, but they're, in my experience, a lot more open, right? There's a lot more queerness. There's a lot more body diversity. And there are specifically POC and, like, Black spaces in which people are having these group sex and these exhibitionist community moments that are really important. So I think when we think about the shame, it's often connected to our internalized relationship to ourselves, when actually we're all here, we're all having a good time. How can we lean into that in this space? And how can we feel welcome in that space?
I think it's charming that that's been your experience of it. Because I remember actually looking into a group sex, like specifics out of parties here locally in DC. And like you were required to upload quite a number of photos of yourself. And basically like you couldn't be fat to be allowed to go to those parties. I don't know that they were racist. I didn't see that part and I stopped looking as soon as I saw some of their weight requirements. But the idea that they had weight requirements was blowing my mind. But certainly those types of spaces exist, but I think also the kinds of spaces exist that are more accepting.
Well, I'd be really interested in and not to bring class into everything, but I think we have like that what's that movie, Eyes Wide Shut, right? Like, so like this secret society, it's a club thing, mm-hmm. whereas there are plenty of like groups of people who are just friends who have jobs and families and lives, and they realize that they have these shared interests, these shared values around sex positivity or kink, intimacy, and those spaces don't feel so closed off and guarded.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of what people get off on about those spaces is that they're exclusive and they like the idea of being in a members-only club.
And while, you know, High Five City, if that's your thing, no shade, of course. But I think to your point about what we were doing around Fire and Under Moonlight is those actually weren't probably exclusive spaces.
One would imagine.
I mean, there could be a whole thing about, like, who had the most animal pounce or who picked the most... I'm not an anthropologist. I don't know these things. I'm making it up here as we go. But, like, there's always been a kind of understanding of status.
Yeah.
And I think what I'm really interested, specifically in queer sex-positive spaces, is how we can break down these very heteronormative ideas of both beauty and pleasure.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we should add, as we talk about group sex, like, I'm using the definition very broadly for the purposes of this episode to talk about any sex that involves more than just two people, even...
Wait, what?
Yeah.
This whole time?
I know.
We're not... I thought we were only talking about, like, orgies. Giant party orgies.
I mean, I think
actually... I have a Captain Crunch hat I wear. I don't.
You and I are big into orgies. I think that's going to end up being a lot of what this episode is about, just because you and I are really into orgies. But actually, usually when I teach this class at kink events, it's usually focused way more on threesomes specifically, which, according to the research, is the most popular fantasy in America, according to the research done by Justin Lee Miller. And I was very amused about your response to that initially when I told you.
Yeah, I was like, really? It's kind of boring. And I don't mean that's boring as in, like, been there, done that. Because I think I have more orgy experience than I have threesome experience.
Seriously?
I do. I mean, that now, within said orgy, it might be, like, a coupling that has become a threesome, part of the greater whole. But, yeah, I think in general I have more... larger group experience and that a threesome seems so like excessively taboo, right? That it's like, oh, like I can see people at their PTA meetings like, oh, it would be so fun if that, like, right, like, you know, with your friends or whatever, but like more than that becomes kind of like, well, how much do you want? You want all 7, 8, 9, 12 in a house? I think, like, threesomes still feel safe. So that's what I mean when I say, like, tame. That, like, there's a kind of, like, social acceptance towards the threesome fantasy.
I think there is. Well, I mean, there must be for so many people to have it, I suppose. Although the second most popular fantasy is BDSM, but I don't think it's mostly BDSM the way we do it.
The way we do it.
The way we do it.
High concept role playing.
Exactly. But also just like way more severe. We
relegate,
and for the longest time within the BDSM community, there's a lot of tension about sex, actually. Mm-hmm. So like that's our background, is coming way more from BDSM community. But the reality, of course, is that for a very long time, group sex as a group sex space was mostly in swinging communities.
Yes.
And there was a really awkward tension between BDSM land and swinger land. Over time, BDSM land kind of won in the sense that swinging communities have really like gone down a lot. They are higher in certain parts of the country,
well,
for sure.
I think you were telling me about this a while ago, but that swinger communities tend to have a more like conservative value
they
system.
They do.
And that's something that, like, I'm not going to say I loudly experienced that, but in my early days of going to, like, group parties, group sex parties, I did feel that they were lean more towards swinger because of the way people came coupled,
mm-hmm.
right? And just, like, the makeup of bodies, right? Like, it was a lot of, like, cishet white men with, like, their bisexual or bi-curious, like, partners, wives, girlfriends, and kind of, like, the game of the girls getting together for the guys. Like, right? Like, there was still this kind of hierarchy that existed in those spaces and whose pleasure was being centered. I remember at one party, for those who don't know, because this is a podcast, I'm Black. hello, everybody. And
I'm white.
Well, I mean... We gotta make sure everyone's aware.
No, it's just like really, really a problem when Black people feel like they have to declare their race, but white people don't.
Yeah, and I appreciate that.
There's that whole like pronoun game thing, right?
Everyone should, yeah. But I was at this party, and it was relatively new at this point. It wasn't like I had some reputation of like, oh, Doug is so cool. But this white man came up to me and was like, hey, how would you feel about, like, having sex with my wife? And it was really uncomfortable, you know, that request, because it felt like I was not there as myself, but I was there as, like, an identity to be fetishized and to be used again for this white man's fantasy, this, like, cock and bull fantasy that I, A, have no interest in participating in, and B, feel like, whoa, hey, like, we haven't even had a conversation.
Yeah.
Right, so there's no recognition of my personhood, whereas in these more like BDSM positive sex spaces or these more polyamorous, you know, sex positive spaces, it does feel like there is room for one's self and not just one's like, you know, driver's license identity with their age, weight, race, those factors you were talking about in that other group you had been looking into.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've been fortunate in that I feel like my experiences have been more positive, which is unsurprising as I am far more the thing that this stereotypical vision looks for of, you know, being a pansexual, slutty white woman of like fairly average build or whatever.
Got a nice butt.
Thanks. But, you know, I will also say I don't particularly like hooking up with guys.
Yeah.
And so when I show up in those types of spaces, I typically find that obviously I get hit on by men a lot. And so people respond sometimes even with confusion over the idea that I'm like, no, I'm really mostly here to hook up with women. Sometimes that's fine and sometimes it's not. I went in the last year, I ended up at two different sex parties where most of the sex that was happening was men and women, even though like the people there were very queer, which I felt was odd. And it's funny because in one of the scenes that I ended up doing superficially looked very like straight, but really wasn't. Like I basically locked two women in a closet as a cuckolding type scene while my husband fisted me and they couldn't see. was it about them? Superficially looked very straight. I was like, I am participating in this particular thing. But I mean, I think it is a problem, but it is definitely something that plagues a lot of these parties, the nature of sexual orientation and how that ends up like working out. And certainly if you're talking about smaller configurations of like just a threesome, then it really starts to get complicated as you're like, oh, are we trying to make this be about whose fantasy are we feeding here? And so much of the time threesomes end up being the thing you're talking about, right? Where it's like a straight guy and he has a bisexual wife and or partner, and then they're picking up another usually bisexual woman who's supposed to be with the both of them. And it's like, okay, that is the, I would say, probably the standard thing in our world, at least. Obviously, if you go among lesbians or gay men, that's not going to be as much the case. But I haven't encountered that many lesbians who are super into group sex. Well, like, even... Yeah. Even like a lot of them, I mean, statistically, they're just not very poly numerically.
Yeah.
And so I think frequently, in fact, women who prefer being with women and who are like homoromantic, at least, right? But do like non-monogamy and group sex, I think is still end up putting down like bisexual on surveys a lot of the time, right? Mm. And so I don't know how all of that ends up showing up data-wise, but obviously gay men are much more non-monogamous statistically, and I think they have a lot of their own group sex parties that I can't really speak to. Have you been to any gay men's group sex parties?
Not specifically gay men's group sex parties, but I have been to some very loudly queer sex parties.
Okay.
Right, and in those spaces there are, like, I'm not going to say everyone's pansexual, but I will say that there is such a variety of gender identity,
yeah,
as well as sexual orientation, that there is a lot of, like, men with men, right?
Yeah.
Cis men with cis men at said party in one moment, but then that cis man could be with, like, a trans man. There's actually this rainbow coalition,
yeah.
of bodies and people. And what's really exciting about those spaces is it's just a different energy in my experience when it's a loudly queer forward, we're talking about gender, but we are not using, like, genitalia as, like, the markers of what we're attracted to.
Yeah.
Right? Like, setting the space ahead of time, saying, hey, like, this is a queer space and we're attracted to people and how to be mindful of, like, trans inclusive language.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Just that alone sets the stage for a much more nuanced, I would say, also generous party space, generous environment, because everyone there who is there has been told this and has opted into this and is going to be supportive of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I posted several lesbian orgies and been a few even, like, specifically women-only sex spaces. And those were quite different, which is not surprising because I think, well, first of all, women tend to be pretty nervous about approaching one another. I've listened to numerous accounts, especially from one of my dear gay male friends, about gay male sex spaces like that, where he's like, yeah, what's his line? That's hand jobs are like handshakes. But women, especially within the context of the BDSM community, I think a lot of times are very nervous about approaching one another. And so, like, a lot of times those kinds of spaces require some poking and prodding. Frequently I'm the person organizing. They require a lot of poking and prodding to get going, but they do go, yeah, once they go.
Why do you think it is this, like, dance, right? That's different. Like, if hand jobs are like handshakes at gay men orgies, why do you think that exists here?
I think it's all over. So, I mean, when you look at a sociologist many years ago was analyzing OkCupid approaches, right? And I loved this fucking numbers. He left out bisexuals because he said it was too confusing for his analysis. But the people who sent the most messages were gay men sending messages to other gay men.
Mm-hmm.
Next down was straight men sending messages to straight women. This is initial messages. This isn't people messaging back. The next one down was straight women messaging straight men. And the last one was lesbian women messaging other lesbian women. So even when you're just talking about the fucking internet and a place where theoretically there's, you know, this sorting and a certain degree of anonymity and safety or whatever, even there, women are just shit at approaching one another. And it's a thing that plagues bisexuals all the time.
Well, I laugh a little bit because, like, I've met many an anxious bisexual.
Sure.
Who is just like, that girl is so pretty, and I just don't know how to talk to her.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just walk. You're also, you're both here.
Yeah.
And I think you're both twiddling your hair in the same anxious way.
Yeah.
You're both looking at each other. Just, what if I'm going to move you over and you're both going to, and I'm going to disappear. And
yeah,
it's a weird, not weird. I shouldn't say weird.
It is funny.
It is.
You can't help but laugh. We call it lesbian sheep around my house because apparently, supposedly, I have not verified this. Supposedly, like, there's a bunch of actual sheep who are lesbians, but they're, like, really bad at actually having sex and they sort of stare at one another. I don't know if this is true. We're like, wow, the women do the same thing. And so we're like, women like me, we joke, are lesbian wolves. We're just like, walk up, be like, hi, you want to fuck? I've written a couple of rants about this online, actually, where like, male partners have been with me while I was hitting on other women. And they were so appalled and also, like, sort of, they were both admiring and turned on, and also appalled. They're like, I can't believe the things that you get away with saying to other women. And in general, I try to really be careful and hold myself to the standard that I think that men should be held to, which I often think is arbitrary and unreasonable. But if I think that it would be reasonable for people to be upset if a man did or said something, like, should I, as a dom-leaning woman, be held accountable in a similar fashion? And I have to make a big exception for myself in terms of hitting on other women, mm-hmm. because if I, as a woman, say things like, oh my God, I love your dress, that does not remotely qualify as hitting on them.
No, it does not.
If I, as a woman, say, oh my God, your tits look amazing in that dress, still qualify as hitting on them, right? Like, as a guy, if you're saying that, we've already crossed a line,
yeah.
You know, like, that's not hitting on them. That's now inappropriate. Like, to be a woman hitting on another woman, you pretty much even have to go beyond, I would like to have sex with you as a hit on. Like, you have to be like, I would like to take your pants off right now and put my fingers in your pussy. Like, that is the level of explicit that you often have to get to in order to be a woman successfully hitting on another woman. And a guy watching that is like, what the actual fuck is going on?
That was a preview of Julie's dating coach book.
Absolutely. My lesbian dating coach book is basically just like, get the fuck over it and talk about what it is that you really want from the get-go, because women will not hear you if you are another woman. They will not get it unless you are just so fucking explicit. And to a guy watching, it is...
It's mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing. Yeah. But like, women understand from men the line, that dress looks great on you, that's hitting on them, right? But like, if the point where you've graduated to your tits look great in that dress, like, you're pushing the line.
Let alone, I want to put my fingers.
I'm not going to do that. It's like, oh, my pussy's right here. Like, that's where the line is on hitting on women. And
but I think hitting on anyone in any group sex space could still be, you know, nerve-wracking.
For sure.
And I think what I have loved about some of the recent parties I've been going to is really an understanding of the structure of the event.
Yeah.
Right? That it's not, we all just came in. So I think people have, like, heard stories about, like, a key exchange. Right?
Like, I've never been to a party like that.
Nor have I, but, like, I think That 70s Show did an episode where there was, like, a key exchange. So, like, again, what is in a kind of, like, cultural zeitgeist of how these parties work versus actually you get to choose, you get to make up the rules.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you get to say, I want to set the space that does this. I was at a party recently, and there was an opening circle moment. There was about 45 minutes of just, like, general mingling. And in those 45 minutes, you were to arrive. And then if you were not there in those first 45 minutes, they closed the door. Right? Anyone who didn't make it on time,
sorry,
you're not here. But after that first 45 minutes of, like, open mingling, there's this open circle in which people, you know, say their name. And then this time they do a kind of, like, say your name and, like, a sound and gesture of how you feel. Very, like, theater kid game energy. And it's really lovely. But then there is an exercise about consent where you are supposed to turn to someone next to you and say hello and ask them for a thing you would like to do with them. For example, I can turn to Julie and say, I would love to make out with you right now. And Julie would say, within the context of this exercise, no. Even if she's into it. In this moment, she says no, because this is an exercise in how to say no and how to receive a no.
Yeah.
Right? How do you, like, come up to someone and say, there's this, I've noticed you, and I would like to do? And you do that back and forth three times. Each person saying no three times. The second part of the exercise is this kind of yes and or no but. Like, I come up to Julie and say, hey, Julie, I want to make out with you. And Julie can say, yes, and when you do that, could you, like, hold me really close, right? Because it's about then checking in with your own desire. You've been propositioned.
Yeah.
And, like, how do you feel about that? Or it's like, no, I don't want you to make out with me, but I would be interested. So now it's practicing how do you, like, have a flirtatious negotiation.
Yeah.
Right? And it's giving tools and language to do the thing that everyone is at the group sex event to do, which is find someone to have a good time with.
Yeah.
And I think it can be really nerve-wracking when there is no kind of structure on how to talk to people.
That's
whether
true.
You are, like, a woman flirting with woman or, like, I'm just a person there, whether it's your first time or your 50th time, I think these spaces are, these spaces can be the Wild West, or these spaces can be like, hey, here are the rules of engagement. And I think somewhere in the middle is where you find something really lovely.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I usually end up hosting at least one orgy kink event a couple times a year. And typically, when the space allows, people ask me things like, oh, how do we engage, right? And it's a lot of times in those types of spaces, one of the things people really are looking for is not have to have lengthy negotiations, which is complicated because these are officially BDSM spaces where the starting norm is like, oh, we're going to negotiate everything. But then, you know, people oftentimes really want to go rogue, which I understand. So do I. But it's tricky in those types of spaces. So I remember one time it was at a queer orgy at camp where someone had set up a dry erase board and put it on top of a like two futons that they pushed together.
I think I was there for that.
I think you were. Yeah. And they just wrote a sign on it that was like, if you're on this bed, you have consented to like automatically normal barriered sex acts, basically, or something like that. Or it might have even been less than that. I don't remember. But, you know, the idea was that it was a place where people could just take that level of that type of consent, at least, for granted. But another thing that I often tell people is like we're going to set as the norm here that you stand a respectful distance away, which is not like right up in somebody's face, it's a respectful distance away. And then if they want you to join them, then they will beckon to you.
Yeah.
And that's like the norm in that space. And we set that up at the get-go, which is really helpful because a lot of times people are like, oh, I see these people over here having fun, but am I supposed to, can I interrupt? Like, what's the rule? And that's tricky in those kinds of group sex spaces. But I don't know how much people have orgies.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's not something that most people get to have in their... I feel like that wasn't something I got to have in my life much for a good stretch in there, outside of going to camp, basically. It's only relatively recently in my life when I started hanging out with some of our mutual friends and whatnot that... And also, I guess, going out of my way to organize more, that I started to have more access to that. And most of my group sex before that was... threesomes, for all that you were laughing at how.
Well, I'm laughing because I haven't had as many of them.
That is so really funny.
So it's and funnily enough, like my preferred threesome is, you know, the trademark devil's threesome.
Right? Oh.
Like two men and a woman.
Really?
Right? Like that. And
are the two guys banging each other, or are they just banging her?
Again, prefer. I would prefer it if it was still like a queer space, right? And I think that's just because, like, I get individually nervous in, like, a threesome where it's, like, two women.
Because oh, really?
I'm, like, I just feel like I feel like, oh, my God, there's so much I need to be doing right now.
Oh.
Right? Or B, it's, like, oh, my God, there's so much happening to me right now. Whereas I feel like in a, like, pansexual, bisexual, like, queer forward threesome with two men and a woman, and again I'm using this language shorthand, like it could be like trans women, trans men,
yeah,
across the board in that way, non-binary folk, it just feels like the pressure is not going to be on me.
No.
There's another person,
there's another person
who, like, great, I can be a part of, I can be a witness, I can be a participant. It's not like on me to make that. And I think it's because, like, the first threesome I had was, you know, the like two women and myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt very overwhelmed.
You know, I mean, I also felt pretty overwhelmed the first few threesomes that I had. And in truth, I think, you know, I teach group sex a fair bit, and I always ask people, like, hey, you know, how many of you actually have had a threesome and how many of you had a good one? And over the years, actually, at least the people who show up to my class, the percentage saying they had a good one previously has risen. So somewhere got the message, I guess, on how to do this. But certainly when I started having threesomes, I hadn't gotten the memo. I thought they were just awkward and kind of weird. And frankly, they were largely something I was doing for the benefit of my husband, who was super into them. I was like, I don't really like dividing my attention this way.
Yes.
I was like, this is not great. And it was not until I started getting much better at DS that I started to enjoy threesomes. And what I always advise people is, even if you're not doing something in the context of DS, if you're doing threesomes or foursomes, really,
it's fivesomes
or fivesomes, up to fivesomes, it is really helpful at any moment in time to have a director. And
get out.
I'm like, you know, it's obviously in the case of DS, it's really helpful if it's a Dom, right? But if you have someone who's in charge of telling people approximately what to do, I think a lot of the anxiety in those types of situations ends up coming from feeling like, am I allowed to just sit back and relax and enjoy myself? Or like, is everyone having a good time? I feel like that was my feeling a lot of times when I was trying to have threesomes. It's like, is everyone having a good time? And that kept me from having a good time. Whereas once I started doing it more with director / especially with me as the Dom, then like, oh great, I get to decide who's having a good time right now. And as long as I'm with people who are submissive enough that as long as I'm happy, they're happy, great, everybody's happy, right? And I think that made a world of difference for my experience of it. Why were you saying get out of here?
Well, because like, of course you're gonna use like you're a theater kid. So like you're just, you know, he's like, you need a director. I'm like, get out of here.
I was the theater kid who had the shirt that said, but what I really want to do is direct.
Fun fact, podcast listeners, Julie, your lovely podcast host, doesn't like Sondheim.
Why do you tell people like that and get all this hate mail?
I mean, I just want them to know who they're getting there.
Rude,
like,
rude, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, we just don't need to go there. I do think that in general, those types of threesomes get...
Sondheim has a whole musical called Company.
He does.
And just, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's got a great song in it.
I mean.
I love that song. You could drive a person crazy. I mentioned that actually in one of the first episodes of this podcast. I do think that you can get a lot better at group sex over time with people. I think the other thing that I missed and misunderstood as I was first experimenting with that was it's rare to have great sex with one person the first time that you have sex with them. It is rare to have great sex with them the second or third time, right? You usually have to practice.
Yeah.
Like I can name on, like, I can list on my hand, and I don't think I'm going to fill it up, the number of people who I had great sex with the first time I had sex with them. It's a short fucking list. And it's really hard. Doug was over here, like, just, like, pointing at
me. I mean, I don't know, man. I thought we had a good time.
I had a great time, man. Yeah, it's true. But we also played together first. We did. And that makes it a little different because at that point it's kind of not exactly
yeah, it's the not first the time. First time like you have a beginning understanding of rhythm
exactly
yeah
and so yeah that's a thing but when you're talking about group sex most of the time you're with somebody who yes. someone in there hasn't had sex with each other before. Yes. It's possible that neither of you has had sex with this person before and the weirdest ones are weirdest but also somehow more even on the playing field are when no one there has had sex with each other before. So you have like a threesome with two strangers, which I'm trying to think if I've ever done that. I must have done it at an orgy at some point, surely.
Well, so I guess that would be my question, right? Like, what defines... Because I think in group sex spaces, like at an orgy, right? Mm-hmm. Like, yes, there can be a pile of bodies, but at some point those pile of bodies might like break apart yes. and they get smaller.
Yeah.
So if in the big pile, like my hands were on you,
yeah.
but like I was doing this other thing, but now we've moved to a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Would you still count that as like?
I think I would give that a maybe yeah. for these purposes. I mean, the thing that's great to me about trying to threesome in that type of scenario that you described is the pressure is off.
Yeah.
If it's not going well, you literally just walk away.
You just dip.
You ditch.
Respectfully.
Yeah.
You know, with a humble, like.
I remember vividly one time I was having, I called it a V-sum, which is where you got like two people on one other person. I was having a V-sum with a girl and I was like this, I was at this type of like larger orgy situation and I had never had sex with her before. I'd had sex with the other person who was on the other end of her. We'd had sex plenty. But I was like, oh, this is terrible. And I just, you know, stopped and went and did someone else. And like, that's the beauty of those types of group sex situations, which is why I personally much prefer hooking up with people I don't know in those types of situations. Because if it's bad, I can just walk away.
Yeah.
But if you get a threesome at your house,
you
and it's not going well.
They gotta use your bathroom.
Somebody is fucking stuck there. Yeah. And, you know, it can just get so bad, which is why one of my, like, worst stories of relationships ever is I was dating this guy and things were not going well. And one of the many things that was not going well between us was the way that he just refused to admit his jealousy and non-monogamy and just, like, discomfort with sex and whatnot. And he was like, oh, yeah, you should message this guy to come have a threesome with us. And I was like, I don't believe that you're going to actually do it. If I message him to show up for this, because I'd never had sex with that guy one-on-one, I was like, it's going to be really awkward if I say no, if this gets weird. I was like, you have to tell me that you mean it if you say this. And he's like, yeah, I mean it. And I asked him 3 times. I was like, mm-hmm. You promise? He said yes. You promise? He said yes. You promise? He said yes. I said, fine, I'm setting it up. So it gets closer and closer to this encounter. And sure enough, he starts to get more and more wishy-washy about it. Thing actually shows up and he just like kind of goes through with it and wouldn't even like take his clothes off, basically. And it was so awkward, especially for the other guy. Right?
Who's invited here?
Right, exactly. And he was like, what is going on? And, you know, the guy I was dating, he and I broke up like that night. And then I ended up dating the other guy. And this is a thing that I really warn people about a lot, is this what I call emotional safe sex, mm-hmm. where if you're doing this type of thing with a long-term partner, and sometimes even if you're not, because you still go home with somebody, if you have a long-term partner and you weren't doing group sex with them, but you're doing it with other people, you still have to go home to that other person. But regardless, establishing boundaries for yourselves yeah. about what feels safe. And I think a lot of people are naive enough to believe that they will say no in the moment, when in fact that turns out to be ridiculously hard to do. And one of the things I hate about kink culture and the way we talk about consent is how much we don't talk about how hard it is to say no when other people are watching.
Yeah.
Especially if it's, you know, my partner, I don't want to let him down. No, my partner didn't want to let me down. I told him to commit to this, right? And like, you could say I manipulated him into it. Maybe I did. I don't know. It was a complicated and messy situation. We've been together a long time at that point. But like, if you think you're going to say no to something and you believe that you could say no, and then you're faced with the actual situation of, oh, but if I call this off, somebody has a bad time. It's hard for a lot of people. And preparing for that can be tough.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard. I guess I just want to, I think at any point in time, and now we're just getting to like individual personality.
Sure.
Like, I do think at any point in time, it is important that a person can check in while stimulation is going on.
Yeah, it's hard to do, though.
It's very difficult. So I guess I would just ask that when you're talking with your partners, mm-hmm. when you at home are talking with your partners about possibly going to doing a threesome or a group sex party or event, just that, like, you talk about it as, you know, Julia's alluded to with her partner beforehand. You talk about it on your way to the thing, but even at the thing, like, find spaces to check in.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that check-in doesn't have to be like, we're going to go to the back room and have a long conversation, but like, whether it's a word or, hey, in an hour, we're going to like loop back in and see how we're doing.
Yeah.
Because if you're choosing to go to these kind of spaces as a couple, like with someone, I don't think you need to be, you know, attached to the hip with that person, but that is the person you should be like emotionally checking in.
Yeah, and I think sometimes actually it is good to step away, because a lot of times you're more willing to tell somebody,
yeah,
this isn't going well if you don't have to say no into somebody's face. Yeah. And so, you know, it can be great to be like, hey, can we just go to the bathroom to get away? But at the same time, and this is where the whole practice thing comes in, right? Is that part of what it is about being good at threesomes or being good at this negotiation thing is it takes practice. And for me, the thing that persuaded me that threesomes were fun was I started dating in a triad, and we just had a lot of threesomes and they were awesome. And so we got to practice doing it over and over again and started learning more about what made threesomes great. And I will say, back to your point about like pressure, one of the things I always caution people going into this, especially if they're new, is the less you can set up your group sex to depend on a bio dick being hard, mm-hmm. the happier everyone will ultimately be. Like, yes, there are drugs for that nowadays, which you can use. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you what to do. You're a grown up. You can make your own choices. But without those drugs, then it can be a lot. And it is common for men who have had these fantasies for a long time to find themselves with two women and be like, yeah, I'm going to fuck them both and they're going to go crazy and it'll be so awesome. And their dick just won't stay hard. And they're really sad about it. And then the women are sad about it and everybody's sad about it. But if you built your sex around the idea that you were going to have a good time without a dick to start with, at least with a bio dick to start with, you're so much more fun.
Well, again, that goes back to what I was saying earlier about like my deep love of loudly queer group sex spaces.
Yeah.
Right? Because like in those spaces, it is, I'm not going to say it is assumed, but like there is an awareness of the possibilities of sex.
Yeah.
Beyond, you know, a hard dick in the hand. Right? There just is. It doesn't mean that like we forget about it, we don't worry about it, but it's just like the fantasy is bigger than I'm going to fuck two people at the same time.
For sure. I will say also, coming back to the theme of practice, that one of the best threesomes that I ever had was when I was with two people and everyone in it had already had sex with each other individually. And that was great because we knew each other well and we knew each other's bodies and it felt much more organic than pretty much any other threesome I probably have ever had, actually.
I'll say, I think my favorite, like, threesome kind of experience is a threesome with a plus one. And I say threesome with a plus one because it was with this couple that I know. And so they've had sex with each other.
Okay.
And I met one of them at an orgy, but, like, we didn't, like, have sex. We were just, like, all in the same space. We're like, oh, we're eyeing each other. And we decided to have a threesome. But when they met up with me, I was with a friend of mine, and she came along as well, but was like a helper.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Right? Like, she was there like, we've gotten hot and heavy. Oh, we need to get the condom. And she's like, I got the condom. So it was like this, like, almost like, to your, you know, metaphor of being a director,
yep.
We had this, like, stagehand making sure we had everything under control.
It's lovely when you get the kind of sub who shows up for that and is just, like, bringing everybody ice water.
Yes, and like, oh, yes, water was filled up. And then there were moments where, like, they would join in a little bit to, like, help ease transition spaces. It was, like, truly, it was really, really, like, effortless.
I actually have in my black book where I list everybody I've had sex with, there's like an asterisk column that's just assists for people where I was like, I can't say that I didn't have sex with that person, but did I really have sex with that person? I'm not sure. They're under the assist list.
You know what? I should start making an assist column. I don't have a little black book. I have my notes app on my phone.
I mean, technically mine is a Google Doc.
What? I really wanted you to have like a ledger. I wanted...
Do you think I just carry a book around with me? It's the fucking 21st century.
Yeah, maybe the 21st century would be prettier if we carried books with us.
Okay, I can't really argue with that, especially as a fellow writer. So we talked a little bit about some of how stuff goes bad, but we really wanted to wrap up by letting Doug share a couple of his highlight moments here in Good Stories for
Okay,
Peace.
All right. Okay, fine. I'll say, like... I think, going back to something I said earlier, people have an idea about what a threesome or a group sex party looks like. And in their idea of it, it often still follows a very, like, cis heteronormative beauty standard, right? And I think a lot of people, for better or for worse, like, come into their own understanding of their own beauty in their teen years, their early 20s, in relation to, like, their ability to get noticed by the person they want to notice them.
Yeah.
Right? And I would just say that as someone who is constantly surprised by the level of attention that I'm very happy and grateful to achieve when I go to these spaces and these parties, I am so happy to find a level of body diversity, a level of gender diversity, and more, like, racial diversity. Hmm. Like, these are the kinds of things where, like, as a Black boy growing up in a majority white space, I wasn't always sure, like, I was deemed attractive, right? And to be in spaces where I'm not only seeing, like, queer folk, but other BIPOC folk, other specifically Black folk, like, relishing their beauty and, like, in this group communal space. It's really, really affirming. And I just hope that whoever you are out there, because I love talking about this like this is a radio show, like, if you're going to call in out there, that, like, when you imagine that fantasy, you imagine, like, the tapestry of people that it could be, like, truly. And I guess, like, one, like, little thing I want to just say with that in mind, it's, like, what makes that place so positive for me, it's because there's an understanding that sex positivity is, like, the baseline that we're already starting with when we enter the space, and not a thing we're trying to achieve in said space. That actually, we have all chosen to be here because we've internalized this value already, instead of trying to, like, discover it here.
That's really interesting listening to you say that, because as you're talking about that, I found my journal from when I was 14 a while back. It's an actual paper journal. And so I can read it on, like, all the things that I typed that are in file formats that are no longer readable. But one of the things that I was talking about was just how much I wanted to grow up and be able to go to Beltane when I was older, which is, you know, where a bunch of people fuck outside under a maypole. And when I was 14, I believed that I was going to have to, you know, save up a bunch of money and buy a property and collect some friends who are going to do this with me. And I was thrilled to learn in my mid-20s that this thing already existed and I didn't have to actually do all of that. But I think that the vision and experience of someone like me who comes in always expecting that that I would grow up to be somebody who would hang out. And I had no preconceptions, I don't think, in terms of my own attractiveness. Like, that wasn't really part of that vision per se. It was just sort of the assumption that, like, of course I will grow up and become a person.
Group sex faces. It was like, I know what I got.
This is what I will do. It took me a long time to get there. But, you know, eventually I did. And I always intended to be there versus someone who, I mean, honestly, you know, you got here way younger than I did, though, ironically. Yeah. And, you know, someone who goes, it never occurred to me that I would be someone who would be in that type of space. That experience is really different.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I knew early on that kink was for me and BDSM was for me, right? Like, that, like, fantasy dreams about, like, oh, what if this thing, what if that thing? That came really early on. But I also think it was, like, kink and BDSM is also subversive.
Yeah.
Right? And I think I've always been attracted to that. And it was only because of places like camp, right, that were both BDSM but also sex positive, that, like, I started to really, really understand how I can fit into both worlds.
Yeah.
Which I will always be grateful for, because, again, like, I tell people about camp as well, and people are like, oh, I bet everyone's, like, 120 pounds and goes to the gym, and I'm like, that's not true,
not remotely.
Like, that is not a thing at all. And this is not to say that, like, that doesn't exist there, but, like, that a real sex positivity, which I think is the cornerstone of any kind of off the beaten path exploration of sex, whether it's threesome or group, it has to be built around, like, an acceptance that we are sexual beings regardless of the body we are in. And accepting that and leaning into that and being grateful and say, welcome in and play. Let's have a great time.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
I think that's a swell note to end this on. So I hope that this has given you some food for thought if group sex is something that you're curious about. And as ever, Doug Robinson does not have much of an online presence, but I'll tag him on Instagram for what it is worth. He's got a lot of plays coming up.
Yeah, I do things.
You do things. So it's worth checking out some of the stuff that he's been up to. And thank you for listening.
Bye.